You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7.
And Ellen look who's back in the hood.
Ellen is back. And Ellen is going to tell our dear listeners and our sponsors and our guests a little bit about our show this morning.
Yes. Well, congratulations, Sita, on another fantastic. We're 10 years strong. And you know why I know we're 10 years strong? Is because I just went through 10 years of our website to upgrade it and do a lot of great things. So SitaMediaInc.com is now working. You can still get your podcasts and everything right from there. Everything has been advertised. Also on 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that on-demand button and get all of that. But another great show today. We've got Keith Beauchamp, who was one of our people that we had on the show before, talk about the Emmett Till project that he had. And then we've got handmade air looms, right?
That's
from India. Priya is such a beautiful woman. I mean,
yes.
Wait till you hear from her.
Yeah, and you know what, for our listeners who probably tuning in for the first time, Priya is calling in from California this morning. We sit here in the studio every Monday. It's part of our lives now, going on 11 years.
Unbelievable.
We do the best we can to bring awareness to social issues, things that are going on around the world. And believe it or not, we've had a lot of authors calling in lately, and everybody has a story to tell, so it's really good to chat with people who have a story. And Ellen, Samantha, and I sit here and we talk, we laugh, we visit, we agree to disagree at times, but we do a great job. And Samantha, thanks for being here with me on Viewpoint.
It's always
with Sita
a pleasure.
And
it's nice to have Ellen back.
Yes.
And a working
group.
Website. Yay, go Ellen.
The group. So some wonderful things happened this past week. This is Infrastructure Week. And I have to say, I'm proud of President Biden. I was going to say Brandon.
Don't do that.
Some people are saying go Brandon. Some are saying go Biden with an R. And some are saying that we're just grateful that the president and his beautiful team were able to deliver this week on the infrastructure bill. And it's momentous steps that they took. It will create millions of high-paying jobs, rebuild the crumbling infrastructure, repair roads and bridges, investing in public transit, expanding broadband, and delivering clean water. And the second part of this bill is going to deal with childcare, the elderly, and social programs and things like that. But, you know, I have to say, before we go on to our guest, I know she's on hold in a minute. So I was at the gym talking to this gentleman, and we were talking about politics and life and growing old and things like that. And, you know, he looked at me and he said, "You know, Miss Sita, growing old is no golden age." And he said, "I can't hear. I can't walk properly. I have to wake up a few times in the night to use the restroom. My wife passed away. His son passed away in a car accident, and he's all alone. And he just loves coming to the gym because that seems to be his source of socialization." But, you know, when you think about it, right, life is such an earthly journey. We don't know when the good Lord is going to call us home, mm-hmm. right? So why not wake up every day and say, "Thank God, I'm breathing, I'm alive, I can do something, right? I can find my purpose on this earth," and just go with it. I mean, we talk about, you know, having a voice and being responsible on the radio, using the right words, saying the right things. And if you hurt someone, what's the big deal? Say, "I'm sorry," mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, that's just, you know, sometimes I talk to these people at the gym and they...
I like your Zeta-isms. That's what I like to call them when you do that on Mondays.
So, so anyway, so I think Priya is on the phone and I'm so impressed by her because, you know, just having celebrated Diwali, I wish I'd known her before I bought the umpteenth amount of clothing I had because I probably would buy everything from her.
Oh my gosh, so beautiful. And her Instagram page just adds more texture to what, no pun intended, to what she's selling. It's fantastic.
So Priya... let me see if I say your name correctly. Priya Gopala Krishnanan.
You got it right.
I got it right? Well, welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and thank you for taking the time to call in. You're calling in from California, correct?
Correct. My pleasure. I'm so excited to talk to all of you today.
I found you on Facebook. Ellen found you on Instagram. We're all going to become friends because one day we hope to have a big Sita and Friends reunion here in Florida. We're doing our part to help the economy in Florida. We're going to do something fun. So, I mean, this is amazing. So you, all the stuff you make, is it handmade or just made with the hand looms? Talk to us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this.
Sure. So I've been in the clothing fashion business for a long time. I used to work for a big corporate company here, a retail company. And a few years back, I took a break, and it's really like my drive towards living more consciously, being responsible to the, you know, for our earth and everything, which kind of drove me towards handloom. I was always fascinated by handloom, and it's really handloom is the cloth is made by hand in a simple like device called a loom. Most of my clothing at this point is sourced from India, where the weavers are still weaving, and there are so many different varieties and styles from the different regions of India. So it really fascinates me. And what I love about it is that it's a sustainable solution to clothing. It's not like, you know, like how usually people buy something every other week or every other day. And it's sustainable. And it's mostly made from natural materials, which is good for your body as well. So that was my journey, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have memory, and I'm sure Ellen and Samantha does as well, of pieces of clothing that we've bought, and it's not about the quantity, but it's about the quality of the clothes, right? And Indian clothes, they do last a long time because they're handmade, and we're able to hand them down.
Absolutely. So I still have, like, an old sari that my grandmother used to wear. And it's really funny because it's never thrown away. It's reused in so many different ways. And it's breathable and it just lasts for a long time if you take good care of it. And it's just a more sustainable way of living, I feel.
Have you had any issues since we've all seen what happened with the pandemic and the ports? Have you had any problems getting your material from India and having it, you know, at the ports and then trucked and all that to your business?
Yes. In fact, like, I kicked off my business and the pandemic hit. So it was like, it shook us, you know, every small business has gone through this. It shook me a little bit, but I picked up from where I left off. And there were times when the weaving completely stopped because of the pandemic. There was a lockdown in, you know, like in different places. And there was a certain period of time when there were no packages coming in. But I kind of worked through that. And now it's back to normal as usual. And it gives me great pleasure to give more business to that community at this point, which was very much affected by the pandemic as well.
Are there a lot of shops where you live where people sell Indian clothing, or are you like the only one in that area?
No, there's a lot of Indian population here. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
There is it's a large Indian community, so there are a lot of Indian clothing available, but I don't think anybody is exclusively doing hand loom clothing. Indian clothing comes in all varieties. There is polyester and all those jing bangs, you know, like those glittery stuff, which is not really handloom. So my focus is really, it is Indian clothing, but I'm also doing a more contemporary clothing. But the focus is on handloom, handcrafted, hand-embroidered pieces, like the beauty and the natural fabrics.
Why handloom, Priya?
So there are many reasons. So number one is it is so unique. So if you take two pieces of a handloom fabric, that was maybe they're exactly the same color, same weave, but they are still so different because each piece was hand woven by a weaver, and every time he weaves it, it's slightly different. You will find the shade slightly different, or a little motif here which looks different. So it's very unique. It's like your own piece of art that you can wear. So that's awesome. Number one. Number two is that it's sustainable. So handloom is all it's mechanical. There is no electricity. They're not using fossil fuels, and most people use natural dyes or non-toxic dyes. So it's good for the environment, for the earth, and it's good for your body as well.
Yeah.
The other thing is it's mostly the rural communities that are weaving. So we are supporting the rural communities. It's a family thing. So women are involved. We're empowering the women. So all of these reasons why handloom.
Oh, I love it. You make me want one now.
Yeah. So you're a graduate of the National Institute of Fashion Technology. That's in San Francisco, I assume, not India.
I did go to a school in San Francisco, which is called Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. I did my post-graduation there. But I also went to the National Institute of Fashion Technology in India.
Wow. So you've always wanted to be in the fashion industry. You seem like you've always had a dream of that.
Yes. I definitely enjoy being in this line of business. I did go to the fashion schools, and I have been working in the merchandising business for a while, but in a big corporate company. And now that I've started my own business, it feels so good because I'm doing what I really want to do and supporting the hand loom and the handcraft.
Right. And I guess it gives you an opportunity to travel all over India in your quest for ancient weaves, and you also sightsee as you go around, and it's such a rich heritage. I mean, we've all watched the Hindi films when people would be in these buses and they would drive by and look at the mannequins with a sari on, and then the person starts dreaming about the fabric and the cloth and where it came from, and you know, it's kind of like it breeds consciousness into your soul. I mean, it's a clothes does that for someone.
Yeah, I mean, I love to travel. So that was really the dream to, as I go discover these new weaves in different parts of the country, there are more than like 200 weaves, different unique types of weaves. So I wanted to go see the weavers, and most communities have beautiful temples and architecture and like so many things to see around that region. But again, like because of the pandemic, I did a couple of trips, and then it was like I couldn't really travel much. So it has been, but because of the pandemic also, there has been a lot of online through WhatsApp, and, you know, like there'll be the weavers have now opened up to communication in other channels. They're not relying on people coming to visit them because they have to survive because of the pandemic. So I'm really looking forward to when this will be over so I can start my travels again.
Yeah, I have to go to India one day. That's where my people came from. But it's just that, like, again, just when I think I have a little change and I could go, to pandemic hit. But you know what I like about what you're doing too? You're giving people in India who normally wouldn't have had a chance to earn an income, you're really giving them a chance to showcase what they're doing in those small villages. And in so doing that, you're sustaining people through what you're doing. They're caring for the earth. Encouraging, you know, this trade. Because I know my husband was born in Iran, and sometimes we talk about the people who make the carpets and how they sit there for hours and get the flowers, and then it turns into dye, and then people use, you know, handmade carpets, and Iranians have a way of turning the carpet over to the other side and looking to see is it handmade or not. And you, Priya, and you're so young, and you found a way to help so many families. You're giving them a hand up, which is what everybody talks about, right?
Thank you. Yes, so, you know, like, what they do is so unique, and I'm helping them in a small way, but what I like to do is take those beautiful weaves, and they're very traditional and classic, But I like to find ways to make it more contemporary, more versatile, so that can be used and showcased in different ways for the, you know, the customers here, for the people who don't wear saris, but they can wear it in different ways and still get the benefit of those handcrafted pieces. So that's always what I'm trying to do. And some of them, you know, like you said, there was one particular weave that I look for revival weaves, in the sense some of the weaves are, a lot of weaves have kind of died because there is nobody doing it anymore. You know, of course, the children of the weavers learn from their parents, but they are moving to the cities in looking for a different job, an office job. They don't want to, you know, sustain the craft because there is no patronage and there is no people supporting them. In fact, there was one weave that I showcased last season, and it was really the last family doing it. And in his community, the men usually weave, but this gentleman had taught his craft to his daughter because he wanted to really sustain it and keep it going, and that was a big deal for him. So it was amazing to keep supporting these communities and make sure they live for generations to come.
Well, I think there's also been with the Indian culture a lot of negativity attached to people who, you know, when you saw them in the Hindi films, hunched over these sewing machines or these long needles. And, you know, a lot of the children aspire to not go into the family business, so to speak, and go into Mumbai or wherever and get away from that. But you're right. People are coming back to basics. People are coming back to things that are near and dear to the earth. And like the fabrics, the fibers, you feel like it's connected. And I personally, I think it's a good thing that you're doing in establishing your business and bringing back that trade, so to speak, in the village.
Absolutely. Priya, I have a question for you, dear.
Yes.
No, you first on after
yeah,
you.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish up what you were saying.
So what I was like to add on to what you said, I really particular about transparency and traceability. So when we talk about so much about the handloom and the beauty of the craft, I want to make sure the credit goes to that weaver. So most of my pieces, I make sure, I usually source from the weavers directly, so I know for sure it's authentic and I can get all the details from the weaver. And so I put his name or her name to make sure, so they know this piece was woven by this particular weaver from this region. And if I'm buying from a cooperative weaver society, then I put their name and the location. So it also builds trust with my customers and the credit goes to them. And you know, also it's also about giving them the right, you know, the value for that piece. And like you talked about being hunched over the sewing machine and not being given the right the environment to work in, all of that, you know, adds to their grief. So it's about supporting that community.
Well, that's so amazing, Priya, and you're definitely leaving your footprint on planet Earth here. Why should we wear clothes made from natural materials?
Yes. So again, you know, natural materials like cotton and silks, and they are good for your body. So in the sense, they're breathable. Most people, because of convenience and the fact that they don't wrinkle, they tend to buy polyester and rayon. It's unconscious. I mean, people don't even know what they're wearing sometimes. And they, you know, like there's been research to show that when you wash these clothes, which are made from man-made materials, they shed something called microfibers, which again is going into our food chain. It's going into the water. And, you know, that is causing a lot of harm to the earth. And not just to you, but to the earth. And it's definitely, not, and again, also the dyes that I use, the chemical synthetic dyes that I use, they're not doing any good to your body. You're wearing it all the time. So now, especially for growing children, I feel like it's the natural materials make a big difference in how they grow and get nurtured. You know, maybe it's not like something that you can wear every day, but I would really encourage people to include more, pay attention to the content of your clothing and wear as much as possible natural materials. Even if it's not hand loom, but natural materials, it makes a big difference.
Right, and like
where's food when I go shopping.
Well, it's like, where's it coming from, right? And is it child labor? And then you start thinking politically, well, who's making this? Who's benefiting from it? But you know, you're right about the clothing, because I noticed some clothes that we wear, some of our Indian outfits, it's very itchy. And the children wouldn't wear it. They'll say, oh, it's scratchy. You know, and then some of them, they're so expensive, but there's no room to open it up when you gain a little weight. Like I noticed for Diwali, my COVID 10. So I put on this really nice outfit and I'm squished. Yeah, and I'm squished, right? And so I'm thinking, God, I wish this designer had given like a little room so you could take it to a seamstress and have them open up the sides. Have you seen clothing like that where they would have like a double stitch? So you could kind of open up one of
you
the stitches.
You want adjustable stitches like kids
yeah,
now?
Yeah, but don't you see that in some of the clothing, and especially some of the expensive ones?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, one of the services I offer to my customers is free alterations, because I want to make sure they get a good fit. So I don't stitch them. I have a manufacturing unit in India which makes the designs that I want. But I always offer when they come and wear it, try it on, and if they want something let out and like custom, I try to make sure it's custom fit for them, so it feels good, and I pre-wash it so there's no shrinkage and stuff like that. And also because it's handloom, there is no itchiness. I hear that all the time from the little girls who love to wear the Bhavna Handloom's clothing. They always come back and tell me how it's comfortable and it's not itchy. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and put the label on the side, for God's sake. What a small label, right? So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we're speaking with Priya Gopalakrishnan. She's calling in from California. You're calling in from Fremont, right? Fremont, California?
Yes.
Right? And so we're talking about her motivation behind natural fabrics, hand looms, and we're talking about why she got involved in handloom. So we have about 2 minutes left. If you could quickly tell us, what was your motivation behind Bhavna Handlooms? Because you're also a mom. You're busy, but you decided that you were going to follow your dreams and open this business.
Yeah, it was not an easy decision. I did take a break after my son was born because I felt like I was just chasing after my corporate stuff and the kids' activity. I didn't feel contented at the end of the day. So I wanted to take a break and focus on family. And then this idea came up, and, you know, like I need to go back to work. I need to start. And I really didn't want to go back to what I was doing. It was my work was great. It was fun, but I didn't feel like I was contributing to being responsible for planet Earth and doing something that helps generations to come and the beauty of it. I want to, you know, showcase this beautiful craft. So it's really about that conscious living, being responsible. And, you know, as a business owner, I feel so proud every time I make a decision to say, this is not a sustainable solution. I'm not going to get that plastic tag. You know, I'm going to go with this paper tag, you know, or disposable bag for my business. And the packaging, I make sure that I don't put any plastic bags, and it's packaged in a way that it's using recycled materials. You know, any of these small decisions, they add up. If everybody is responsible, I think we can help our earth.
So you're bringing consciousness into clothing. And here's another thing. A lot of us have a lot of saris at home sitting in the drawers that nobody's going to wear. Can you take those off our hands and make something with it for your customers?
I wish you would start wearing it. And I could come up with some ideas to how you could wear it in a more contemporary way. And
well, that's what I'll do. I'll have to come to San Francisco and see you, and we'll have to come up. Give
and
us
all
the website.
The itchy, scratchy, and the tag thing is coming from an Indian mother of two girls who
that's
probably
right.
Listened to that.
Yeah, oh my God, and my grandkids. And so your fashion, do you make for men and women, correct?
Yes, I have introduced clothing for men, and I will be eventually for babies and, you know, more khadi materials, which are so completely sustainable and eco-friendly, zero carbon footprint material. So I am looking into more natural dyes, native cottons, you know, all that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing more beautiful than walking into a room and seeing colors. And that's what, you know, the Indians, no matter what's happening, Diwali, or prayers on the temple, people look good. And when you look good, you feel good. So give us your website or way of people to contact you if they wanted to get one of your hand looms and, you know, the made of natural materials.
Absolutely. So I have a shop on Facebook. So you can just type Bhavna Handlooms. That's my handle. Bhavana Handlooms. Handlooms. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram and Etsy.
Well, Ellen is busy working here, and she's listening to you, and she's going to put all your information on our Facebook page.
Yes, we have all of that, and you can also get your download. We'll have your download ready for you probably in the next 24 hours to listen to this great episode again. But we are going to listen to our sponsors real quick, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these quick messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9. That's cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Ellen, what a great day we're having in the studio. It's good to have you back. And that was a really great segment with Priya.
It was a great segment. I love it when women just make a decision one day and say, I'm going to go after what I love to do. And she's making beautiful clothing and being able to travel. Well, probably not during the pandemic issues, but being able to travel and go to spots in India and connect with people and connect with the culture again. It's such a cool thing.
Right. Keeping that heritage alive. Yeah. And those customs, because that's not something you're born. You're taught that.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people nowadays, they're not keeping their cultures alive.
No.
For whatever reason, we live in a time when this generation, it's more like a generation of entitlement, like me. And you can't really get people to sit down and put their phones down and have a conversation about grandma and grandpa. The minute I start up with my children about, well, I used to walk 2 miles to school in the hot sun without an umbrella, bare feet, they're like, yeah, you know. But I mean, I think this is what's happening with the United States too. I mean, when people say we want to take our country back, I think some of them actually mean they want it the way it used to be. And it's not, you know, we're watching right now where people want to go back into trade. They want to learn things. They want to become apprentice again, right? It's not everybody's meant to go to college or other things like that, right? Some people want to go into the military or whatever. And this morning, I don't know if you guys were listening to the radio this morning, but they were talking about trucking.
The trucking industry
is trying to get people as young as 18 to 19-year-old because, I mean, we all talk about politics, right? But the world is political. Everything you do is political. From the time you wake up in the morning till the time you go to bed at night, you go to Walmart, the stuff is on the shelves. How did it get there?
Right.
Which oceans did it cross? Which ships? Who controlled the straits? And who drove it there on the truck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And every single industry right now, every area, not just the transportation of the goods and services that we have, but think about the products that we need, like, and the stuff delivered to your house.
Right.
I mean, all of those trucking departments, if you will, are trucking
companies.
Yeah, integrate into so many different things.
Right.
People
and
don't realize
is,
it.
Right. And the thing is, I don't know if you have anybody who are truckers in your
family. The whole Nazario side are truckers, third generation truckers. Like, the grandson is literally out there trucking, and he travels every day from Tampa to Melbourne. He actually delivers to downtown produce, but it's something that they all saw my uncle do it. It gave a good living, and it meant a lot. Back then, it meant a lot of time away from home because the real money was over the road.
Right.
But with what we're not realizing, industrial, even locally and nationwide, is that we had a lot of people die with COVID.
Right.
That's going to leave gaps in certain industries.
Right, right.
These are the industries being affected.
Right. And the thing is, you know, what people don't understand too is, you know, when you stop to think, like Priya was saying, about the pieces that you buy, whether it's clothing, whether it's furniture, people say buy American, right? And we do. We want people to buy American, build American. But here's the thing. If you go to China, there are people that actually stands up in the pose of a guard for 14 to 16 hours a day. And this I heard from a friend of ours. Are Americans willing to put in that kind of a time and work for those wages to get the goods on the shelves at Walmart, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hear people talking all the time about, because of President Biden, things are expensive. No, dude. You go to Walmart and you see a jacket, start thinking, who made the jacket? Where did it come from? You know, it was a child labor, whatever it was. It's not about President Biden setting up the price of gas or the clothing. It's whether we like it or not, a trucker had to bring that goods to the Walmart. Somebody had to make it somewhere. It had come through an ocean and a big old liner because the freight, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to think about all of that. And with the pandemic, yes, people died.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get angry.
And with people not wanting to go back to work. And, you know, and then again, that whole cycle starts all over again.
And
there's
right.
a lot of people that were in the trucking industry that right now either can't afford it or they weren't great business people because it is a business.
And it's expensive. And a CDL expensive. License is not cheap.
Yeah.
And exactly here's the other thing. I mean, most, I remember when we were kids, we had like a bureau, a wardrobe or something. My mother taught us how to take care of it. You don't slam it. You don't break the lock. You protect it because you paid for it. Someone worked hard to buy that. Mm-hmm. We live in a time now where people throw away things.
Well, we've lost that appreciation they dispose, over the last 20 years.
I mean, look at the trash. Look at the landfills. They don't take care of things. So maybe this pandemic are teaching all of us to go back to basics, number one. And number two, take care of what we have. In Trinidad, the men, they wash their cars. They put oil in it. They clean their garage. Their homes are clean. Their yards are clean. The women help. And I think it's just one of those things where you can't just say prices are high. Look at what you're doing.
I just followed Dr. B's example. I recycle. I'm planning my own food now. I know you don't want to hear this because he drives you crazy. But
yeah.
Well, I'm glad, but like Dr. B's my idol. So yeah.
Well, we have our friend Keith Beauchamp on the phone. Exactly. And he's worked so hard for justice for Emmett Till. Now we find out about Till, this movie. It's about history. It's about what happened 20 years or so. Keith has been working on this. He first had his documentary where he called in with us. And when the news broke that Dr. Tyson's book, The Blood of Emmett Till, was being released, and that Carolyn Brian Donham confessed to fabricating her story in the courtroom in 1955, a lot of us said, oh my God, what next? And then, of course, I went to Keith's page and I saw what's going on. So welcome to the show, Keith, and thank you for calling in to Sita and Friends.
Hello, Sita. How are you?
I am so proud of you. I'm so grateful that God put you on the same time in this planet as I am. And I'm so motivated and amazed. And man, you inspire all of us that if we believe in something, keep fighting for it.
Yes, I have to say this is all surreal to me. You know, filmmakers work for so long in their craft and in their passion, and the story of Emmett Till, of course, as you know, was deeply part of my life since I was 10 years old. And so to be able to not only tell the story one time and prompt the case to be reopened in 2004, but also having a second time to resurrect my dear friend and mentor, Mrs. Mamie Till Mobley, and the legacy of her son is truly, overwhelming to me. So this journey has just been quite interesting. You know, I get inspired not only, you know, when I think about my accomplishments, but by others, you know, who was already ahead of the game, who inspired me and who has helped me actually get to this point, because it takes a lot of discipline and patience. I have to say that.
Yeah.
And patience and faith to believe that you can accomplish things that many say or think is impossible.
Well, you know, our Creator have a way of bringing us together with people in our lives who I like to say they are angels, they are mentors, they're people that they see something in us that we don't see in ourselves. And I think that Mother Mobley saw that in you, and boy, I wish she was here to see this.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the thing about being at this point in my life. I just made 50 this year, and it gives you an opportunity to reflect on your accomplishments and the things that you left undone that you want to complete. And so I look at this time of my life as a milestone and the next chapter. And so you get to reminisce and you get to think about the past a lot. And I think about Mother Mobley often. I mean, she believed in me more than I believed in myself at that time. And all I've done was, you know, just try to uphold the promises that I gave her before she passed away in 2003. And, you know, it's just, you know, everything has been working extremely well. Things are falling in place. The timing is ripe. And which is remarkable within itself in light of all that has happened in the past few years. There's no story that speaks more to this generation and time, racial climate and political climate, than the story of Emmett Till. So it's a blessing to be able to continue to tell this story and, you know, educate the public about the importance of this case to society, not only in our past, but present.
Well, you know, I had a patient of mine once, and every time she would, you know, propel her wheelchair near me, for some reason, she would say to me, "Hey, Sita, I know that you're a Democrat and I'm a Republican, but do you know about Emmett Till?" And I'll be like, "No, I don't." And then she'll say, "Well, you know, they took his eyes out." And I felt sorry. And I was alive. And she, you know, she will tell me about the story. And then I would say, "Well, I know about the story from my friend Keith Beauchamp." So can you refresh the memory of our listeners about what happened to Emmett Till and how they had to, his mom decided she was going to open that casket. And that sparked the civil rights movement in some ways that people don't even know about it.
Absolutely. Emmett Till was a 14-year-old black Chicago youth who in 1955 went to the Mississippi Delta to visit his southern relatives. Within a week's time, Emmett was abducted from his great uncle's home, tortured and murdered for one of the oldest taboos of the South, addressing a white woman in public. Two men were soon arrested, but later acquitted in a court of law by an all-white, all-male jury. What set this story away from all the others, because there were many murders and lynchings that occurred in 1955, but what set this away from all the others was Mrs. Mamie Till Mobley's courageous decision to have an open casket funeral so the world could see what happened to her son. And it's because of this action, Rosa Parks decided not to get up from her seat on that bus in Montgomery, Alabama. She has been quoted for saying many times that Emmett Till was foremost in her mind. Also, Emmett Till inspired Dr. King in many ways. Dr. King was 26 years old at the time of his death. And Dr. King decided to take on the Montgomery bus boycott, not just because of the actions of Rosa Parks, but he felt that the murder of Emmett Till was an intimidation factor to keep black people away from the polls. 1955 was an election year. So this is what Emmett Till's story became, the anti-lynching, and I have to reiterate this, that became a part of the anti-lynching movement of their day. And it's just ironic that we're still fighting for an anti-lynching legislature even today.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because Mother Mobley, I think of her as my mother as well, because, I mean, she fought, 48 years for her son, for justice for Emmett Till. And I think she was very courageous. And her words up to today speak volumes for this generation, and it would also speak volumes for the next generations as well. And I saw you on The View with Whoopi, so I wanted to ask you, tell us a little, I mean, you can't say much about the movie, but what can you tell us about your journey up to this point?
Well, it's been a constant struggle, because I call myself an unintentional filmmaker, just like Mother Mobley was an unintentional activist. I was thrown in this position and realized the tools that I had at my fingertips and how I could implement change in my own way. The documentary, The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till, was my first film. It was inspired by Mother Mobley. It was encouraged by her, because I was at that moment when we met early 95, 96, I was actually trying to produce the feature film first.
Yes.
And I wrote a screenplay that was eventually optioned off by producers who worked with Showtime, and they sat on the project. And so it was like they took my baby away. They had it for like 3 years, and I couldn't do anything with it. And so going back into Mississippi, finding witnesses to the murder, and those who were willing to come forward inspired me to think of other ways to get the story across. And of course, Mother Mobley encouraged me to do the documentary, and that was used as a stepping stone to get the case reopened in 2004. But, you know, it's interesting, because my world has come full circle. You mentioned earlier that in 2017, Dr. Tim Tyson wrote a book entitled The Blood of Emmett Till, that boasted of a confession given by the last participant who's still living, in this case, Carolyn Bryant Dunham. And it's because of that book that the case was actually reactivated. And so we're still fighting for justice in the Emmett Till case. And it's similar to what I did in back in 2004 when the case was released, because of the, not when the case was released, but when the documentary was released. It was going on at the same time as the reopening of the case. And now we have this again. I'm doing the feature film at the same time of the reopening of the case. And I'm producing the film with Whoopi Goldberg, Fred Zolo, Barbara Broccoli, Thomas Levine, and Michael Raleigh. Our director is Chinoya Chikwu. And we have an award-winning long list of cast members who people should be really excited about seeing. I mean, Danielle Deadwyler is playing Mother Mobley. She was able to resurrect my friend, and just sitting on set watching her at work was really surreal.
Yeah, I've been following your travels with this movie, and when they build the set where the two men took Emmett Till, I broke down. I was like, wow, yes. I didn't think yes. you would live through that, because how can two grown men take a 14-year-old child and do that to him? For what? Because he whistled at a woman at a store? A wolf whistle? I mean, in today's world, I mean, in some ways, we're still fighting things today, but that was heartbreaking for me when I saw that set.
Yes, Sita. It's interesting because, you know, you mentioned the two white men, Roy Bryant and J.W. Malum. They're the ones who are known to have been involved. What I uncovered it was up to 14 people involved with the kidnapping and murder of Emmett Till.
Wow.
Five of these men were black men who were forced to participate in the crime. So having to see that come to life, on set, was very emotional for not only myself, but also the cast members. It was very challenging because a lot of the cast members that we actually hired to play these roles, in particular from the white role standpoint, was very difficult for them to do because they didn't have that kind of hate in their hearts. So to have them, to encourage them to act out these scenes in a way was very challenging. And I'm sure when the film comes out next year, many of our cast members are going to come and speak out about their experiences on set. It was very emotional.
Yeah, and I read where the two men, Milam and Bryant, who were acquitted of murdering Emmett Till, that the jury only deliberated for 67 minutes. And back then, one of the reporters heard one of the jurors was saying that they wouldn't have taken 67 minutes if he hadn't stopped to drink some water. And that just broke my heart because, I mean, how do you just, talk about the murder of a child like that and say, well, I mean, the verdict would have been earlier, but I just stopped to get some water.
Well, it was already a foregone conclusion that the jury were not going to indict the murderers of Emmett Till. In fact, weeks prior to that, and leading up to the trial in 1955, a number of the jurors were visited by members of this, the White Citizens Council, and convinced to not indict the men. And so, although this is 1955, we see a lot of this going on even today. In light of the cases that are currently in the news, the Ahmaud Arbery case in particular, there's 11 white men who were selected as jurors. White jurors, not white men. But and only one black juror in this case of the murderers who are on trial for murdering Ahmaud Arbery. And so a lot of what we have seen in the past, we're seeing now. And so we have to be very conscious about what is happening in this country, because it's in our face now. It completely shows you where we are. It shows us how far we have come and how far yet we have to go.
Yeah. So where do we go from here as a nation, as a society, as a world, all of us on this journey on Earth together? so that we can see and promote justice for all. I mean, where do we go from here, Keith? Because the movie that all of you guys are moving there, it's powerful. And people should watch the movie and walk away with the sense of, wow, what can I do to make a difference?
Sita, where Mother Mobley often told me, Keith, you must continuously tell Emmett's story until man's consciousness is risen. Only then there will be justice for Emmett Till. I used to take that saying lightly. You know, I didn't truly understand what she was saying. But as I grew older, and in light of all that has happened in recent years in this country, I have to say those are words from a prophetic person. She understood that the only way that man would have liberation in this country, you know, man and woman, the only way we could have racial progression in this country, she believed, by reminding people of the story of Emmett Till. If we could arguably say that the civil rights movement was the greatest movement ever created by citizens in this country, the most successful movement, then you must look at the story of Emmett Till and understand what transpired in 1955, not only within the death of Emmett Till, but the actions, the courageous actions of Mother Mobley, who, again, was an unintentional activist, a mother who lost her loved one, who was forced to face the system. We continue to see that every day when you hear about the deaths of black and brown people on the streets of America. And so it's very important that we not look at the story of Emmett Till as something in our distant past, but look at it in a way of just opposing it to what's going on currently in this country, because it's not so different. Things may have cosmetically changed, but the fight for freedom and justice and human rights remains the same.
Can you tell us a little bit about...
this is Samantha. Samantha has a question.
I'm Samantha. How are
you? Hi, Samantha.
Tell us a little bit about Mama Mobley's fight for justice and her insistence on the open casket.
You know, Samantha, that has been a very difficult topic for me to talk about, because I have been just this machine since her passing in 2003. I haven't properly mourned her passing. But, you know, the only thing I can say is that, you know, this is a woman, and Sita spoke on it. She fought for 47 years until her last breath, trying to seek justice for her son. She never had another child. She told me personally she would never bring another child in this world that she believed of hate. Until things changed, she said she could never bear to see herself having another child because of the suffering that she endured throughout her life, you know, of course, after the death of her son. Mother Mobley, after Emmett Till was murdered, went on to continue her education. She became a teacher later on in life, educating the youth, you know, in many ways, not just, you know, your daily curriculum in school, but she instilled in them the value to speak for those who can no longer speak for themselves. And I'm just a product of that. And so there are many people who have been touched by the words of Mother Mobley, and she was probably, she is the most prolific person I will ever meet in my lifetime. When she spoke, her words moved your soul. I have never had anyone who could speak to me in a way that words could actually, I can feel. And so I have been, you know, blessed to have had her a part of my life and my career, because without the murder of Emmett Till, there would be no Keith Beauchamp filmmaker today. And without those who lost their lives throughout the civil rights struggle, we all would not have a path to follow. And so it's
we owe them. We owe them a lot, Keith. How old were
it's
you
our
when
obligation.
Yes, how old were you when you met Mother Mobley? You were probably, what, 10, I think?
I was in my early 20s.
Okay.
10 years old when I first discovered the photograph of Emmett Till. I was in my parents' study, and I came across a Jet magazine that my parents kept. And as I opened the pages, on one side of the page, there was this angelic face of this young boy, some sort of a mirror image of myself at the time. And on this other side of the page was the horrific corpse of what these men done to him on the other side of the page. And that was, it was at that time my parents introduced me to the story. But the story itself was used in my family's household. I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And so the story was often used in my family's household to teach me about the racism that still exists.
Right, and a lot of parents would say, you know, nothing, don't leave the house, you know. I mean, I've given that speech to my son several times, being a dark kid. But, you know, Carolyn Bryant, when she testified, we have 2 minutes left, but I just want to ask you really quick. When she testified outside the presence of the jury in the Emmett Till case, she said he purchased 2 cents worth of bubble gum, made lewd acts towards her, and then he whistled.
Yes.
Has she ever been brought to justice? Do you think anything is going to happen for her to pay the price for what she did?
Sita, I thank you for asking that question because it's very important. The case, again, was reactivated in 2017 because of the possibility that we can go out after the remaining perpetrator in the case, and that's Carolyn Bryant Dunham. That was 2017. We're now in 2021, and we continue to fight to get justice, and all we're hearing over and over again is that the case is currently still being investigated. Well, I can tell you personally, I'm the person who brought the evidence to against Carolyn Bryant forward, and I can say to you definitively that there's nothing to investigate. All we need to do is have a DA that has the courage to bring this case forward, and also a DOJ, Department of Justice, who have the courage to lay down the law in terms of how Carolyn Bryant Dunham should be charged for the kidnapping and murder of Emmett Till.
So
we also know the only reason why she have not, been arrested and charged is because she's a 70-something, 80-something-year-old white woman, and we all know what white women stand for when you talk about Southern pride in the Southern states.
Well,
and
Keith,
I'm sorry
thank
to
you.
Be so Wait. Harsh about it, but that's the truth. And I'm hoping that justice will prevail some kind of way before it's too late.
Keith, this is Ellen. Thank you so much for the interview today. So when can we see the movie? Last couple seconds.
We don't have a date yet, but the movie will be out next year, just in time for the award season.
Well, so we will make sure we keep posted.
Please follow.
Yep, we'll make sure that we keep everybody posted. Thank you again, Sita, for another fantastic show.
Oh, I love Keith. If you have extra tickets to the screening, send them my way. I'll fly wherever.
Yeah. There you go.
I will make sure you will have tickets. No worries.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much. Tune in next week for another edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you,
Keith. That was a...
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.